I would wake up every morning understanding that the insights I had had the day before were completely stupid.
For 50 years, violist Kim Kashkashian has been playing the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Recently, she decided to go ahead and finally record 6 suites for viola solo. That's the story you're going to hear this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Kim, you are one of today's greatest advocates for the viola. You perform around the globe and you teach, and you've also built the repertoire for your instrument by seeking out other composers who now are also seeking you out. Your new recording, though, is kind of taking a new approach to finding new repertoire for your instrument. And it's a recording of the 6 suites by Bach, originally heard on cello. Tell me why you wanted to do this.
Well, this is a interesting point that seems to be a very consistent question. But from the perspective of a violist, these suites are something we all grow up playing. This has been part of my repertoire for 50 years. Not to mention the fact that the solo cello suites are played on numerous instruments, including the marimba and the trombone. They survive everything. That having been said, I think there's a lot to be said for the viola version, which is simply 1 octave higher than the original cello version. In certain ways, it brings out a lightness and a quality of dance. When we talk about the 6th suite, then it was actually written for another instrument entirely, which was a 5-string instrument. So I play it on a 5-string viola, which in a sense is possibly at least as close to Bach's original intention as playing it on a 4-string cello. So the relationship to those pieces that we all have, all cellists and violists and many, many, as I mentioned, other types of instruments, is a very complete one because the pieces are so unique in their perfect architecture and perfect structure, and yet the incredible degree of subjective personality and humanity that is in every single movement. And bottom line, it doesn't matter what instrument you're playing these pieces on, as long as A, you hear the hidden bass line, and B, you understand the structure of the music.
Tell me why these works are so significant. Why are they so important to be in your repertoire for 50 years, like something that you obviously learned very early on in your career?
Well, Bach as a composer is significant for any classical musician, and hopefully for many non-classical musicians and a lot of audience members. It's one of the most significant bodies of artwork that we have, and it's to be enjoyed and learned from on many levels and over many, many decades.
One of the things that I think you might be doing a little bit differently or adding to this in terms of your perspective is the way that you use ornamentation, where you don't use it on the first pass through. But when you have a repeat or something, that's when you start to add in the ornamentation.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about your approach to that?
Of course. I also am making two sets of articulations. Okay, so the slurs and the separate notes are also sometimes grouped differently in the repetition of a movement. And that's basically what it's for. The repetition is to provide you the chance to create variety, to create perhaps your own reflection, personal reflection, on what the music is doing to you and hopefully to the audience at that given moment. That being said, it was a tough choice to actually document a set of ornamentations because nobody should imitate it and it should never be repeated. I mean, hopefully if I were to do it again, the ornamentations would have a different flavor. It's not something that you want to see repeated, so I decided to include it simply as an example, but hopefully not something that will be imitated.
You mean by others or by you yourself?
Both. Both. If I walked up on stage and did exactly what was on that recording today, I would be remiss and not being creative. So hopefully that would never happen to me, and I would hope that others would simply use it as, oh yeah, that's possible. Maybe I could do this instead, or this plus. So it's only a jumping off point.
You open this recording with the suite number 2 in D minor, and then you close it with the suite number 6 in D major. What was the significance in doing that for that sequencing?
It was a question of dramatic intent and arc that we wanted to create throughout the set of suites, a certain dramatic arc.
Can you explain that a little bit more for somebody who might not understand or might just be discovering these works?
Well, the D minor suite is perhaps the most introverted of all of them, taken overall. And because the other minor suite, the C minor, is quite a bit more dramatic. So I think there was the thought, and I work together with Manfred Eicher, the producer, who often has a great sense of arc and drama. So I trust him. And he said, you are you, and you need to open with the D minor. I think he feels that that's my type of personality that is best expressed that way. So I kind of jumped with it.
I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of the prelude and the dances. And I don't know if there's an easy way or a concise way to explain what the composer's intent was with these dances and that leading prelude.
The prelude sets the scene, it sets the emotional scene. It also gives you some hints about what's going to happen in terms of meter and groupings, and all kinds of rhythmic hints are in there too, as well as the larger emotional message. That having been said, if you look at the sixth suite, the prelude acts as a kind of dance. There's less room for fantasy and much more room for meter orientation. But that's the exception. In all the other preludes, you're given the opportunity to act freely around a bigger pulse. So instead of thinking in meters, in bars, you might want to be thinking in phrase length, and your rubato feeling can go for the whole length of the phrase. if you're talking about a minuet. Then you need to always feel three, the third beat, the upbeat, as a lifted dance motion. That's where the dancer would be lifting their leg to go to a new spot on the floor. So there are certain rules about some of the dances. Certain of them are absolutely set, so you will always have an allemande, you will always have a courante, and the sarabande is also set. But the minuets, the gavottes, are interchangeable. He could choose one way or the other.
I was struck by you using the term rubato, because that's actually what I was thinking of as I was listening to these suites earlier today, and I was hearing that especially in the courante of the suite number one. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. It feels like the timing is changing and kind of just going with the flow of the piece.
Well, what you're saying, what you're saying is something I would hope to be able to do. That there's an ebb and a flow within the meter and also within the phrase. Yes.
Yeah. I guess I do not play a string instrument, which is probably obvious by my questions because I'm asking for more clarity on some of these things. But I always think of Bach as having, you know, being much more metered. You know, being more. Just in terms of time signature and things, because, you know, we always hear about how mathematical his music is. So when I was hearing that, you know, that sense of give and take, which I think more of in a composer like Chopin or somebody, I don't know, I found it very intriguing. So I appreciate you explaining that further for us.
Well, I think the question of balance in all its aspects is extremely important, no matter which composer you are approaching. But in the case of Bach, we are talking about a kind of architectural perfection which is unparalleled. You could take any small cell of any of these movements and it would be complete in and of itself. You would find an internal balance. And you can expand that to the phrase size, and you can expand that to the half of the dance movement size, and you can expand it to the whole movement size, and then, and that's what one tries for, you can expand it so that the entire suite also has a balance point. So balance and that kind of architecture are seen on many, many levels. And in that sense, meter becomes part of a bigger picture.
As I was listening to the prelude to the G major suite, the suite number one, which probably is the movement that people might be most familiar with among the suites of Bach, I was thinking the tempo felt a little bit quicker. Are you taking this tempo a little bit faster?
Faster than what?
Well, then I might hear another performer play it.
Well, it might be faster than some, and it's possibly even slower than some. I really don't know. It wasn't my job or goal to do comparison shopping. I think that if I can just talk a little bit about today's music world, too many of us do too much of that, and it's not necessarily helpful to the development of an individual expression.
As I was listening, I was just trying to find things that I thought might be distinctive in your interpretation, and that just seemed to be something that jumped out a little bit, so I thought I'd ask you about that.
I can say one thing, that in that prelude, the harmonic motion is slow. There's not a lot of harmony changes per bar, and therefore there's good reason to move more quickly.
I'm wondering, do you have a favorite among these six suites?
I do not, but on any given day, I do. But if I were to mark down on a calendar every morning when I wake up and I get to choose what I want to start with, it's always Bach, and it will be one of those suites. I suppose over the course of a month, the E-flat suite might show up a little more frequently, and the G major suite might show up a little more frequently, but not by much, because it's both mood and atmosphere dependent. Which one are you more oriented to on a given day? It's like looking at your library and saying, I have all these wonderful books here. Which one do I feel like picking up this morning? It's like that. And as far as favorite movements, perhaps, again, in the E-flat suite, the Allemande. That is so pure and so complete that one turns to it for many, many reasons.
As you decided to make this recording, what did you find most challenging?
The idea that an essentially improvisational repertoire would be put down as a document. And, you know, we're speaking back to that question of ornaments, and also to the point that with Bach, one is never completely right. As I was doing studies over the years of these suites, and especially in the intense phase, maybe 6 months before the recording, I would wake up every morning understanding that the insights I had had the day before were completely stupid, and that it was time to move on. And this is something that only Bach can provide to an interpreter, I think, is that sense that the majesty of the creation is so much beyond what any of us can understand, that there's always more to learn. So that's a challenge, to say, okay, that's going to remain true. Nevertheless, at this point in my life, I can put down a document and stand for it. Yeah.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media with Kim Kashkashian talking about her new Bach recording. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this week's episode. I'm Julie Amacher.